Welcome to Moco's Most Famous. I'm Joe Yashroff. We have a very special guest with us today, Chris Matthews from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And we are going to be talking about the Mormon Temple, that beautiful, huge structure that you see, you've seen a million times. It looks like Oz. It looks like Disney World. It is not. It is a holy place. It is a very special place, and we're lucky to have it not only in Washington, D.C., but in Montgomery County. It's arguably or inarguably the most famous landmark in our county, and Chris Matthews is going to tell us all about it. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Joe. It's nice to be here. Happy to help.
Absolutely. We're happy to have you here. So we pass by this temple every day, you know, millions of times, and we see this beautiful thing, this beautiful structure with the gold trumpet player. When you drive by it also, what feelings do you get when you drive it, having done it for probably millions of times yourself?
Yeah, I remember the first time I came to Washington, D.C. out of graduate school, a friend of mine picked me up at the airport, and he purposely drove to where we would be coming to the west as you come over that rise near Georgia Avenue, and boom, you know, there it is. Because he thought that would be very meaningful to me, and it was. It was in the evening, and so it's a powerful statement. It's a very sacred place for us. We're excited about the renovation that's taking place and look forward to having lots of people come and visit the temple when it's open to the public after the renovation.
Yeah, you talk about that shot when you kind of drive over the hill and then you see it. It really is really, and I'm not Mormon, so it doesn't have a special meaning to me, but it really is just really cool, for lack of a better term. You see this beautiful structure. Do you still get that feeling when you see it?
I should. I'm always struck. I mean, it's just, it's beautiful. I don't see how I couldn't. But I get those kind of feelings around lots of beautiful structures. The National Cathedral, I feel that's a holy structure built in honor of God as well. But yeah, I do, and it's a special place. It's a beautiful place for us to go and commune. I think it's important to understand that we believe that there have always been sacred locations designated by God and hallowed by His presence, and He used those places to instruct His children. I mean, if you look in the Old Testament and New Testament, Mount Sinai was certainly one of those places, the Garden of Eden, Mount Carmel, where the transfiguration took place. You know, all are really important. And He commanded His children in the Old Testament to build temples. And the earliest temples were constructed by the Israelites, and those are called tabernacles. And they were, in effect, portable, tent-like structures, portable temples. And then later, the, you know, construction of the Solomon's Temple. There was a temple of Zerubbabel and then Herod's temple in the time of Christ. So we're a temple-building people, and there are sacred things that take place there where we make covenants and ceremonies are participated in, where we gain knowledge about God and what we're supposed to do in terms of keeping His commandments and making the world a better place, aligning our lives with someone who is perfect in our minds.
Why Washington, D.C.? Why Montgomery County? Why was that chosen for such an incredible temple?
Yeah, it's. I don't know if I can tell you specifically why, but it's historically important to know that the Washington, D.C. temple was the 17th temple built by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and that was dedicated in 1974. The first temple was built in 1836. Mm-hmm. So only 17 temples. Now we have 160 around the world. I think the why is Washington, D.C. It mm-hmm. was the first temple built east of the Mississippi in the United States. It's the capital of the United States. And in that sense, it certainly is a place where it gets attention, just like it does when you're driving on the Beltway or any place else. And we certainly want people to know that God is present and is actively involved with His children on the earth, and a temple is certainly representative of that. And it was a relatively large area that it served. In fact, when it first opened, members from everywhere east of the Mississippi down through South America, that was their designated temple to go to perform ordinances. That's a long way to come from South America, but we've certainly accommodated that with other growth.
unlike some of the other great churches, cathedrals of the world, whether it's St. Paul's, whether it's Notre Dame, we know, unfortunately, what happened there several weeks ago. The Mormon temple is not one where you can just show up and walk in and go to the into the actual temple. So there's a very good reason for that, if you could kind of illuminate the reason.
Yeah, certainly temples are different than our where we meet weekly in our religious services, where we are instructed, where we partake of the Lord's Supper and those kinds of things. Temples are really there to participate in ordinances and ceremonies that will sort of enhance our understanding of God, to teach us about, you know, the importance of gaining greater knowledge about God, learning to live in accordance with His will, and gaining the power from that to do good in the world. The one ceremony that maybe I can give you a little more information on is called the endowment ceremony. Mm-hmm. And that is, the word means gift, and the blessings that come from that. And during that ceremony, we certainly are instructed and gain greater knowledge about the purposes of God, a clear direction to serve others, and then the power to do what God wants us to do. And during that ceremony, basically, it enhances our understanding of what God's plan is for His children on earth. And the ceremony presents God's plan. It's divided into a number of sections. One talks about the creation of the world, the fall of Adam, the central role of Jesus Christ in not only overcoming the fall of Adam, but also the gospel associated with that. And that is really a part of what takes place there. There's a lot of symbolism within those ceremonies. People who come into the temple to participate in the endowment ceremony were all dressed in white. Mm-hmm. And that symbolizes purity and the equality of all God's children. And then there's symbolism in the simple rituals that are teaching about the gospel of Jesus Christ. And during the endowment, we move from room to room, which symbolizes the progression that people go through in their lives in terms of adhering to God's plan and progressing.
I want to talk a little more about the actual structure. Mm-hmm. So you have these spires, you have the gold, which is just beautiful to see from afar. And then you have this bugle player, and you're going to help me with the pronunciation, but I believe is Angel Moroni.
That's correct.
And this is not just any bugle player. There is a great significance to this beautiful thing that we see from afar.
Yeah. There's enormous symbolism in the spires. Mm-hmm. The three spires on the east are higher than the ones on the west, which are symbolic of the gospel of Jesus Christ originating in Israel, the east, and then being restored in the Americas to the west. The structure, I think the highest spires are almost 300 feet tall. Moroni, the angel Moroni we refer to, is playing a trumpet. And the symbolism of the trumpet is to announce the restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ on the mm-hmm. earth. And if you were closer to it, you could see that in his arm, he is carrying what it symbolizes, the gold plates, the metallic plates from which the Book of Mormon was translated. And we can talk about that mm-hmm. in a moment.
Sure.
But Moroni was a key figure in the restoration. We believe that Moroni was a prophet that lived in the Americas around 400 A.D., mm-hmm. compiled a lot of the records that became an abridged version of the historical record of a people that came from Jerusalem around the time of Zedekiah in 600 B.C. to this country, basically to escape the destruction of Jerusalem. The Book of Mormon is an abridged history of those people, and Moroni helped, basically took those records and made that abridged record. And the temple, basically, that symbolism, given he's a key figure, the statue of the angel Moroni is on about 130 of the 160 temples in the world.
Now, you're not going to give me a quiz on this at the end of the podcast, are you?
There will be a quiz.
Oh, my goodness. I may not do too well, so I may need to cheat and look at notes. Okay, so we see scaffolding there. There's obviously a huge renovation taking place. Can you tell us more about it, update us on when will it end so people can
sure.
go back in?
Yeah, I think I mentioned that the temple was originally dedicated in 1974, so it's needed an upgrade. There's been a few changes in HVAC systems, electronics, and so forth. So there's a total major renovation of the interior. It'll probably look very different. It will be very upgraded. The expectation is that the temple will be open to the public sometime probably around the fall of 2020. We don't know specifically, but there will be an open house. It'll last for a month or so. The first open house, when the temple was originally opened, over 750,000 people attended. Certainly you're invited to come. It's a beautiful structure and will be even more so. We expect over 1 million people to visit the temple during the open house, and there are preparations already going into that work.
Is it hard to wait? Has this been a difficult process for all the members?
Well, with it being so convenient to us in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, the nearest temple for us to go to is in Philadelphia. So that's a 2.5-hour drive rather than maybe a 20 or 30-minute drive. So, yeah, we're looking forward to it opening again. But, again, where we have access to temples and other locations, we certainly go.
So now when a renovation takes place in a holy place, the church, and correct me if I'm using the wrong word, does it have to be reconsecrated or rededicated before it opens?
Yeah. After the open house, it will be dedicated by a leader of the church. And once it's dedicated, it will only be open to members in good standing who qualify and live by those principles that we feel are sacred and we're required to live. And then, yeah, that will be it for public.
And so you touched on it. So if you're Mormon, that doesn't guarantee entrance into the temple. It's much more than that.
Absolutely. I'll just tell you a few things. We believe in having very high moral standards. Mm-hmm. So one of the requirements is to live the law of chastity. Another thing is we're tithe payers, so paying a full tithe.
Can you explain that?
Yeah. As in the Old Testament, you learn about the ancient Israelites paid a tenth of their increase to the support of the Levites, who were the ones who ran the temples in their day. So we pay a tenth of our increase annually to the church for the building up of the kingdom and making sure that the work of the Lord can go forward. So that's certainly one of the requirements.
So there are many differences between Christianity and the Mormon faith. What are some of the other basic differences that people might not know or they may have heard of and they're not clear on?
Yeah, a number, even some Christian faiths have indicated that they don't believe that we're Christians. And there are a couple of unique differences. The concept of the Trinity is different. Our understanding of the Trinity is sort of the pre-400 AD version, where God the Father, Jesus Christ, and the Holy Spirit were separate persons, whereas in the discussions in the 400 with Constantine, that changed the whole notion of the Trinity. Another one, we don't believe in original sin. Mm-hmm. So that the fall of Adam, we don't believe that people should be punished. They're only punished for their own sins and not for Adam's transgression. So infant baptism would be something that would be unnecessary from our perspective, because the fall of Adam was the fall of Adam. That was his and Eve's choice to make. And so that's a significant difference there.
Now, you're a bishop. Mm-hmm. A bishop in the Mormon Church, what does that mean? What do you do?
Yeah. First of all, we do not have a paid clergy in our faith. A bishop is probably the equivalent of an imam or a rabbi or a priest in another faith community. So my responsibility as a bishop of a congregation, and my congregation's in Germantown, Maryland, is to oversee the operation of the faith within that geographic area. I get lots of help. I have two counselors. There are leaders of a number of organizations. We staff probably 100 positions, Sunday school teachers, primary is for children, youth leaders, men and women's organizations. So I'm sort of the pastor of that group, and to keep things moving and people are learning and progressing in their faith in Jesus Christ.
Before we started recording this podcast, we were talking about interfaith. You said you spend a lot of time outside the Mormon faith with folks in other religions. How important is that to you and in the Mormon religion?
It's really important to me and to our faith. I think if you look at our history, in the 1800s, we were not a popular bunch in certain parts of the country, and we eventually settled in the Salt Lake Valley to sort of escape persecution along the way. Certainly, that has changed. We're not as inner-focused on just being clannish and to ourselves. But yeah, my mother was a social worker. My dad was a corporate CEO, so I've got this sort of schizophrenic sort of DNA within me that. But they were both very interested in outreach and service. My mother taught me about other faiths ever since I can remember. All the kids would learn about other faiths. So I'm very involved. I recently participated. Councilman Sidney Katz just sponsored a Seder supper for Passover and invited a group of faith leaders to participate in that. And I was one of the faith leaders invited. I'm going to be participating in an iftar as part of Ramadan tomorrow with a good friend of mine who's an imam in that mosque. I'm working with a number of faith leaders on some initiatives within the public school system, and it's really important to us.
Religion in 2019, we don't have time to really get into this, but how has the Mormon faith, the Mormon church, tried to be modern? You know, religion obviously has been around for centuries. How has the Mormon church and faith tried to modernize what you do?
I don't think we have. Okay. We've pretty much stayed focused on the basics in terms of our theology and mm-hmm. faith. Certainly, we have taken advantage of resources that have become available, social media and various things. We certainly understand that the challenges that face youth today versus when I was growing up are very different. So understanding the context in which we live is important. And then instilling in one another the importance of adhering to positive principles that make the community a better place. We certainly haven't made any effort to modernize the principles of the gospel of Jesus Christ. They're eternal. They don't need updating, and they're as useful today as they ever have been. I think how those are employed in terms of policy, if you will, how we learn to love one another as a community, we've had to go through the same development that anyone has. You know, at the times of slavery in this country, those perspectives, you know, Christianity had to rationalize, how can we be enslaving people and say that we adhere to the principles of Jesus Christ? That was a struggle for Christianity that they had to deal with. And I think there's the same kinds of things. Homosexuality, transgender, we're all children of a loving Father in heaven. So how do we take maybe our secular perspectives and incorporate that into the principles of Christ, that we are to love one another and to love God, and to love God is to keep His commandments?
Very interesting perspectives from Chris Matthews from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We're going to hear much more on MoCo's Most Famous. I'm Joe Yashroff. We'll be right back.
MCM, your community media center, is making Montgomery County a great place to live through programs like 21 This Week. Montgomery County's hardest-hitting political talk show keeps you up to date with the local political scene. Montgomery Community Media. Our middle name is Community.
Welcome back to MoCo's Most Famous on MyMC Media. Our special guest today is Chris Matthews from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We've been talking about the Mormon Temple and the Mormon faith. A lot of interesting stuff. We probably need about 4 or 5 more hours, or maybe 4 or 5 more days. I don't know that you're going to give us that amount of time, but we're going to try to get as much info as we can in our remaining time. One of the things the Mormon Church is known for are missions. And I wanted you to tell us what you can tell us about missions.
Sure.
How important it is to the religion.
Yeah. Well, again, like I mentioned earlier, we believe that our faith represents the restoration of the gospel in these, the latter days. And as a result of that, we feel it's important to get that message out to the world. So young people, certainly senior citizens too, at the age of 18, have the opportunity to go out and tell other people about the gospel. I served in southern Germany on my mission back a million years ago. Very positive experience. It's a great experience in terms of understanding another culture. And also, I mean, you certainly learn how to do a lot of public speaking and those kind of things. I've found it just very enriching in my life. But we're not pushy about it, but we certainly feel an obligation that we're to preach the gospel. There are probably around 80,000 young people serving missions throughout the world in 140, 150 countries worldwide.
And proselytizing is a part of that? How does that work?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, I was knocking on doors, you know, asking if people were interested in hearing our message. There's less of that now in that those days of people answering your doors and letting two young men walk in have changed. But the mission in terms of telling our message to the world is still very important. Again, we believe in the agency of all people. We're not going to be pushy about it, but if they're interested in hearing the message and want to follow up with instruction, then that's the purpose of those two-year missions.
Your role in what's happening today, you know, throughout history, there's always bad stuff going on. The last couple of years have not been, I would say, America's proudest moment. I think that's safe to say, no matter what side of the aisle you belong. Do you feel the church plays an important role in restoring respect, civility, those kind of things that are not necessarily part of religion, just part of being a human being? And
I hope we do. We try to be nonpartisan. You won't see the church making pronouncements on political issues, but we certainly have recently come out and made statements when we think certain things have been said that are inappropriate. But I think the most important thing to us is that people realize that within most all human beings, there's some basic goodness, a desire to make the world a better place. Whether you're a Democrat, a liberal, a Republican, a conservative, an independent, it doesn't really matter. But I think trying to avoid contempt for one another, I think, is probably the greatest problem we have now in terms of holding one another in contempt. We're so dug into our truth, if you will, that we can't even see past the ability to listen. And we would certainly be of the mind that people should pay closer attention to one another and speak and focus on the common ground and work from there to build a better society. And that's one of the reasons we're involved in interfaith work, is to find that common area, because we feel the secularization of the world is really could be a threat to freedom of religion. And that's something that's important to us.
So has that become a bigger focus the last couple of years?
I think it's becoming a greater focus. I don't know if it's just in the last 2 years, but it's certainly been a focus of ours. Certainly the world is becoming more secularized. 2 years ago was less so than now, and I think it's going to continue to be that way. And the sad thing is that, you know, political perspectives are then cast against what faith someone belongs to. And if you're a Christian or a Jew or a Muslim, certain beliefs are ascribed to you that aren't necessarily the case. And for those reasons, people get demonized. And that's something that's unacceptable to us, certainly.
I want to bring this back to Montgomery County. So we were talking before about your involvement with public schools in Montgomery County having to do with bullying and hate. It would be great if you could tell us about that.
Yeah, it really was triggered by an event that happened in Montgomery County, and that was the desecration of the synagogue in the Kentlands, the synagogue where Rabbi Jacob Blumenthal was the rabbi. He's just been made the head of the Assembly of Conservative Rabbis and is no longer going to be the rabbi there in the coming months. But his response, we gathered at his synagogue. They caught the three perpetrators, two juveniles and an adult, and he asked to participate in their discipline. And so he took the time to educate them about Judaism, took them to the Holocaust Museum, talked about symbols like swastikas and articles of clothing that are sacred to Jews. And the thing that was amazing is that they had no idea that their acts of hate, they didn't intend it that way, and it's been a change to them. So that dawned on me that there's an opportunity to teach the youth. So I've been working with some other faith leaders, primarily of those religions that get targeted, Jews, Muslims, and Sikhs. and we're forming interreligious clubs within the high schools, and we're starting with Upper Montgomery County, where the purpose of those clubs will be to learn about one another, understand articles of clothing. You know, I might go up to a friend of mine wearing a baseball cap when I was a teenager and knock his baseball cap off. But you don't do that to a Jew wearing a yarmulke or a Sikh wearing a turban. Those are very sacred symbols. And so we'll begin dialogues with kids to help them understand and get a deeper understanding of the sacredness of their faith.
That's great. That's great. What are some of the misconceptions, misunderstandings about the Mormon church, the faith, the temple? I know there are a lot of them out there. I'm sure I have them, you know, because I would love for you to set us straight.
Well, we talked a little bit about a lot of people think we're not Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the nickname Mormon sort of helps perpetuate that rather than the full name of the church. But another one is that we're just an American church. It's just in North America, when in reality, we're in 140-plus countries. More than half of the members of the church are outside the United States now. Another one is that we keep to ourselves. We're very clannish. We're certainly breaking out of that and have for the last couple of decades. We still practice polygamy, and that's we've got some TV shows that there's a group of polygamists that certainly are not members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. There are several groups that split off the church over the years. And another one is that we're racist. And I think that comes, there was a time in the church history when, and I mentioned this before, when everyone was trying to rationalize slavery in the context of Christianity, we got caught up in that too.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph Smith, the founding leader of the church, included, we're certainly baptizing and members of African descent and ordaining men to the priesthood, but somewhere around 1852, the culture began to change. And so there was a prohibition for a period of time up until 1978 where people of African descent could not hold the priesthood or participate in temple ordinances. That is no longer the case. And from my perspective, it was a mistake. We don't really understand how it sort of got incorporated into the policy of the church, but it's been basically repudiated by the church ever since.
One of the things the Mormon church is known for, the Family History Center, some call it Genealogical Center.
Yeah.
Tell us what goes on there.
Well, again, I think it goes back to we feel like we're all children of our Heavenly Father, children of God, and understanding your roots is really important. Where we came from, who our family members are. We just had a wonderful opportunity recently to help digitize the Freedmen Bureau records. The Freedmen Bureau was established after the emancipation of slaves in the South, where the government established schools and hospitals and so forth. But all of these records that were kept during that time period were never digitized. They were all paper records. So the church, in conjunction with the recent museum, helped digitize those records to help people of African descent find family members. I mean, you can imagine how difficult it is being someone of African descent in this country,
sure,
post-slavery, trying to find a link back.
Mm-hmm.
So those records have helped that process a little bit. But it's really part of that process. It's also connected with temples. We feel that there have been many, many people over the centuries have not had an opportunity to receive the saving ordinances. And so we do proxy ordinances for those people whose genealogical research we have that can connect into the family of God, if you will.
And now, correct me if I'm wrong, but anybody can go to this center.
Oh, yeah. It's, in fact, I would say non-members of the church are probably more active in using the Family History Centers, and there are thousands of them.
Okay.
There's one in a church, in a chapel near the temple, the Washington, D.C. temple, that is open to the public, except on Mondays, and it's closed because the local African-American Genealogical Society uses it. So they're using it doing research during that time. But any other place, they're open. Where my congregation meets, there's a Family History Center, and it's accessible to anybody.
So I promoted the fact that we're going to talk about the Book of Mormon. I see you smiling. So I saw the show. It's been around for probably 20 years. Yeah. It won a lot of awards on Broadway, still around, still touring. Irreverent, disrespectful, I guess you could call it. There are a lot of things, controversial. My guess is in the beginning that the church probably were not big fans of the show, but I want to ask you, I don't want to put words in your mouth. What was the initial reaction, and then what was the reaction a few years later?
You know, I didn't hear any of the church senior leaders mm-hmm. react. There's always people that sort of focus on the negative.
Sure.
But for those of us who see it as opportunistic, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a lot of free publicity if you think about
Absolutely.
The Book of Mormon. I mean, the play, while very entertaining, had nothing to do with the book. I mean, it was a story totally detached. You know, the book itself, I think if people would read the book, and we believe it's another testament of the Savior Jesus Christ, that will change their life. And like they say, the book's better than the play.
But I thought it was interesting that, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. And I think the church, I think that was a brilliant move to maybe embrace is the wrong word, but to say, hey, look, it's out there. It might have some stuff we're not happy about, but there's millions of people going to this thing. So let's use this to our advantage.
Well, there's always, as a group becomes more known, mm-hmm. people are going to take shots at you. I mean, it is what it is. And you can either curl up in your blanket mm-hmm. And suck your thumb, or you can say, hey, here's an opportunity to open a discussion. You can certainly get off the play and into other types
sure.
of things. So
sure.
I like to take advantage of those opportunities.
I'll never have a chance to be inside the church at a ceremony. So there's some mystery involved with the Mormon church because most people can't get in there.
Oh, in the temple?
In the temple, I'm
yeah.
sorry, yeah. So what is different than another Christian ceremony or being in a Christian church where everybody can go to? When you walk in, what would be the major differences?
Yeah, our chapels are weekly, where we have our weekly meetings. There's a worship service that begins. We're together for 2 hours on Sunday. So there's 1 hour of worship that you would find in any traditional faith community. And then there's an hour of instruction. The children between the ages of 3 and 12 go for instruction. They have instruction for teenagers, adults. And so that's sort of what happens in our worship service. Temples are different. Latter-day Saints attend temples. They participate in sacred ceremonies or ordinances. The one that maybe I can talk about, which is the one that's probably most known, is the endowment.
Mm-hmm.
The word endowment means gift and blessing. And as such, it really provides instruction on getting a greater knowledge of God's purposes, clear direction for ourselves to serve others, and then the power to do what God wants us to do. And in the endowment ceremony, it really enhances our understanding of God's love for all of His children. And the ceremony basically presents God's plan to redeem His children, starting with the creation, the fall of Adam, the central role of Jesus Christ in the lives of His children. And then there's all of this symbolism that goes on there,
sure.
too. We meet in there's a group, you go through this in groups. So there may be a group of, say, 50 people, men and women, all dressed in white, enormous symbolism associated with that purity, and then the fact that we're all equal. There's no differentiation between rank and so forth. And the other part of that is the ceremony moves from room to room, symbolizing the progression of humanity through life. And then it culminates by entrance into what is called the celestial room, and that symbolizes being in the presence of God. It's a beautiful room, and it reflects the beauty and peace that one would expect in the presence of God. And it's a place where members of the church go to spend time there to ponder and to think about their life. I mean, our identity as Latter-day Saints is very much centered around the temple. So when we have difficult decisions to make, have challenges in our lives, going to the temple and contemplating and communing with God to work those things through are an important part of our faith.
What's the major difference with the temple here and the one in Salt Lake City?
That one's older. The interior is very different.
Mm-hmm.
I was married in the Salt Lake Temple.
Oh, really?
In fact, the Salt Lake Temple, they had just announced a major renovation of the Salt Lake Temple. That was built, it took 40 years to build. Wow. They started building that in, I think it was 1853 and finished in 1896 or something like that. So it's going to be upgraded. That'll take about 4 years. In fact, a friend of mine who's not a member of the church does historic preservation, and he specializes in paint and plaster. So he's been hired to do a lot of that work. But in terms of the ceremonies, they're the same. The architecture is similar. As you look at the exterior, that's one thing that's similar. The interior is a little different, but in terms of the purposes and the intents, it's all the same.
How excited are you for the renovation in D.C. to end so the church can open up again?
It'll save a 2.5-hour drive to Philadelphia, where that's the closest temple that we have to go to now. I think we're all excited for a couple of reasons. One, to be able to go back there, but also what it's going to look like. Because my understanding is that the upgrade and interior changes will be fairly significant. Like the temple in Rome that was recently dedicated, the temple in Paris, these are sort of jewels to the world. And also, we feel that if this is going to be a place where we can commune with God, we don't spare any expense. So it's going to be a beautiful place.
Chris Matthews, thank you very much for talking to us about one of the jewels of the world. Very happy to have you here. Thank you for educating myself and I'm sure our listeners too. And we hope you have a great day. And thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Joe, for having me. It's been a joy for me too.
That'll do it for this week's edition of MoCo's Most Famous on MyMC Media. I'd like to thank Carolyn Raskauskas for engineering, also helping me prep with the show and everything else that she does and everyone else at MyMC Media. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.